we're ready to start again, and we're going to have a couple of announcements.
Hi, everybody. I'm Kathleen, compulsive eater, bulimic. And I'm going to pitch the OA birthday party, which is coming up in January. It's going to be our 54th birthday party. For those of you who don't know, it's the 54th anniversary of the first OA meeting. It's going to be the weekend of January 17th through 19th at the Four Points by Sheraton in LAX. It's going to be a weekend of recovery workshops, meetings, meditation, yoga. It's going to be a fabulous recovery event. There's flyers on the literature table in the back. You can register on the website at oabirthday.org. We're also looking for volunteers, so if you're interested in being of service during that weekend, please see me or Ellie, or just go directly to the website and email saying that you're interested in being of service, and I hope you all come out. Thanks for letting me share.
Great. Thank you so much. And now we will now observe the seventh tradition, which states we are fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While the basket is being passed, we're going to have the 12 traditions be read. And we have the following speakers.
All right, the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Two, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. Three, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. An OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaders Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you so much. Our next promise is promise number 7. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows.
Hi, I'm Steve, a compulsive overeater.
Hi, Steve.
I just want to start by saying thank you. I'm so happy to be here. I'm so happy to be in this room with all of you and being asked to share a little bit about my experience with this promise. And just for those of you that are listening in cyber world, I'm sitting in a room of probably like 50 people, and they all have such beautiful faces, and I'm really comfortable and just happy being in this room with them. Today's kind of an exciting day to actually be talking about this. It's December 7th, which is Pearl Harbor Remembrance Day. And on that day, there were many service people who gave their lives for the greater good, and there were injustices in the world, and they were not into selfish things. They were interested in other people. And you guys gave me that. When I came to this program, I was selfish. I wanted you to go so that I could eat. I wanted you to, like, stop talking so I could eat, you know. And I went about my life making a mess, going up the scale, down the scale, 30 pounds up, 30 pounds down. Until my life came crashing down, I was whipped pretty bad. I was beat up pretty bad. I was really, really messy. And I was like, okay, God, I will do whatever you want. God, by the way, is my higher power. And I came into this room, and you guys weren't selfish. You guys were interested in me. That promise was introduced right away, and you guys were like, hey, what's your name? And I was like, Steve. You guys were like, sit down, Steve. And I started getting better, and you guys started teaching me things. And I was told to find a man that had what I wanted and ask him to sponsor me, and I did that. He was very interested. Which was the word that's used in the promises. And we met, and he took me through the steps the first time. We sat in the park and read the big book. He taught me about Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob Silkworth and took me through the steps. My life started changing. And I'm really, really thankful that happened. And what's happening in my recovery now is the loss of selfish things, you know, like this is a really a beautiful life, you know, and this program, as far as I know, I'm not any spiritual guru, but as far as I know, the point is that life should be enjoyable. We should have a good time. We come here when we are having a hard time with that, you know, we're getting beat up with food in some way or another. I come in here for an hour at a time, hour and a half at a time, so I can go out there in this big, big, beautiful world and enjoy it. And I'm doing that right now. I come to the meetings, and if I think I have something to say that maybe was going to help somebody else, I'll say that. And when they say, can you sponsor? I say yes. And right now, I'm caring about like 5 sponsees, and they're all good guys. And if they want to get better, I'm gonna show up for them. You know, I have call times for them, and listen to them on the phone. I'll wake up. There are a few of them. I wake up 5:30 in the morning, I get to a Starbucks. By 6:30 in the morning, I sit down with them, I bring my big book with them, and I look at all their stuff, and we move through slowly, and I offer them the opportunity to get what I got from one sponsor and then a second sponsor, which is like some serenity, a new way of thinking, you know, a new way of living my life, and I'm going to continue to do that, you know, so... I don't know how many people will listen to this, but you're welcome to call me on my phone. My cell phone is 310-351-3528. Anybody in this room, if there's something that I can do for you also, I will try to do that. If you have questions about this program, if you're new, if you want to talk about a food plan or abstinence, or you just need some big guy to pick up some boxes and you're moving apartments, you know, if I can do that for you, I want to do it, because when you guys recover, I recover. That's really the truth. This is a we program. No big changes are made alone. You know, if I'm making a big change, chances are I'm probably working with a doctor or a personal trainer or a lawyer or like some other kind of spiritual guide or whatever, or a priest or rabbi. And I tried it by myself and it didn't work. You know, I want to urge people just to really get that this is a we program and ask for help. It's okay to ask for help. It's okay to tell the truth. And to find a higher power that works for you. It's a great program. It's a great way of living, and it's a big, beautiful life out there. It really is. If we can, you know, just work this program one day at a time. And I think that's probably enough for me. And again, I just want to say thank you to all of you.
Promise 8: self-seeking will slip away.
Well, it sounds like a slow blues song. Hi, I'm Victor, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Victor.
When I was in the fourth grade, during one particular holiday time, and don't necessarily confuse it with what we're going through possibly in the last few weeks, because it really doesn't matter. But in the school that I was in, the grammar school that I was in was a religious school, and there were different grades that did something for each one of their performances. And when the eighth grade came up, they were standing on some risers so that there was a choir setting. And there was this particular religious icon that was supposed to be standing in back of them that was about 7 foot tall, roughly 5 feet wide. And the stand wasn't working. And so I held it through the entire performance, which was only a rehearsal. And the reason I tell you that story is that from a very young age, my self-worth was so far down, and I didn't know it, that I had to seek out from other people to get their compliments towards me. Oh, and by the way, afterwards, when they were exiting the stage afterwards, I sort of conveniently placed myself where I could be there on the side when they would walk by and they would say, gee, thank you for doing that. I'd go, oh, that's okay. Because my thing in growing up was I somehow had to be the really nice guy so that you would do everything that I wanted to. And if you didn't, watch out. It might not have happened at that moment, but like a friend of mine once said many years ago, he was an injustice collector. It was like having, for those of you who may be over the age of, well, whatever I happen to be, I think I'm 31 years old, you may remember something called blue chip stamps or green stamps. And this injustice collector, every time something would do something to him that he didn't like or that he felt was unjust, you got a stamp in his imaginary book. And if you happen to be the really, really lucky person who got that last stamp, guess what you got? You didn't get just one stamp's worth of resentment and anger. You got the whole book. And that was me. Because I had to have the righteous indignation to be able to say to somebody that, look what life has done to me. And unless for some reason you're holding me up in tremendous amount of self-esteem as a balance to my lack of self-esteem, which I was not aware of at the time, then somehow life is not fair. And so therefore what I have to do is I have to go out and seek different people, different places, and different things. And here what I had to do was I had to seek something to be able to have salve those wounds of hurt and anger and rejection and not being good enough. And food was always my friend. It never judged me. It was there on time. It took whatever form I needed to at that particular moment, in terms of whatever amount that I needed. And guess what? It took away my problems for about 60 seconds. Now, all it really did was took all those problems and stuffed them down. And when I came into OA, one of the things I'm tremendously grateful for was that I came in on my knees. Because one of the things that appears my higher power does to try and get my attention is usually use a 2x4 upside my head. Because I want to live in this fantasy world of what it is that I think life should be rather than an acceptance of what life is. And one of the things I'm tremendously grateful for about this program is it allows me to be me with all of my warts, literally and figuratively, with all the things that I do wrong and sometimes occasionally do right. And as it says in the literature, it says we are not saints. But what we do one day at a time is we try and do the best we can to improve. And I'm grateful that here that improvement means that it doesn't have to be directed towards me being in the limelight. I can be, as it says in the literature, just a worker among workers. And in the process of doing that, I get a tremendous amount back. Part of my self-seeking was seeking for that eternal happiness that would always be there, so that I wouldn't have to deal with the ups and downs of life, so I wouldn't have to deal with my own character defects. And today, the thing that I'm grateful for, and I've come to this realization in the last couple of years, and this may seem odd to some people, I value and would rather have serenity than happiness. Because somehow in my pursuit and self-seeking for the happiness that I sought, it was completely out of balance and I didn't know what was really good for me. But it took a few bumps along the road, a few 2x4s, and I'm grateful to say that my higher power is willing to soften me up enough that I was willing to come into these rooms. It's going to be, God willing, the creek don't rise, and January 16th of 2014 will be 23 years. I'm grateful that when I walked into this program, I was willing to, in that very first meeting, raise my hand and say, I'm a compulsive overeater. I am no better and I am no worse than you are. And I'm grateful to say that somebody shared their food plan with me that allowed me from one day at a time there going forward to remain and abstain just one day at a time. So when I tell people that I've had over 22 years of abstinence, immediately afterwards I say something that somebody in another program told me one time or asked me the question, what's the world's record for, in this case we'll call it abstinence, and the answer is only 24 hours. Sometimes it's 24 minutes. Sometimes it's 2.4 seconds. Because all I really have to do is to want to be able to be of service to other people and get outside of my own head. And I'm grateful that I have the privilege to be of service to the people in this room and other people whenever the chance arises. And I'm grateful that you're here tonight, because without you, without this program, I'd be back in the food again. And today I can be grateful for the fact that I can be abstinent one day at a time. Thank you very much.
Promise 9, our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change.
Lonnie, compulsive overeater.
Hi.
I'm actually supposed to be sitting back there listening to all these wonderful people, and when I came in I was asked to speak. No preparation, which was an actual blessing, because it means that now I listen to each and every speaker as it goes. It never has to get any better than that. December 1985 was my last binging December holiday, ate it all season. And from that point, beginning in February of 1986, I was struck abstinent. And I'm a 100-pounder. I came into Overeaters Anonymous at 340 pounds. And I'm happy to say I'm not that today. I'm not at the goal weight I would like to be today. I am a work in progress. I move forward, sometimes in tiny steps. That's okay. Forward is forward. I take that. Be careful what you ask for. Be careful what you speak. I'm a real believer in the power of what I say. I've learned to speak better. Thank you for that moment of mercy. I've learned to speak better about myself, about you, about my fellows at work, about my family, and I have learned that what I speak, pretty much, I believe anyway, I will create. I will create right in my mouth, I will create it. And what I think I probably will become. Hence, the lessons over the years have been, be really careful what I think, but be really, really careful what I speak. When I came to you, I was very fluent in two languages, English and profane. So I was profane first, English second, and very quietly, someone who became my first sponsor said to me at my first meeting, she said, you know, we all know how to say that. Oh, really? Okay. Well, then perhaps I could exercise another word. I'll go find a better few words, and life goes on, and I learn. So, be careful what I ask for, because this morning I had my car serviced, and I had to put two new tires on it. Now, last week I was on a road trip, and I had to put two. Okay, so you know this story. I now have four new tires. But this is an expense that is kind of rocking an already rocked financial place at this moment. And the fear starts to grow. The fear just starts to grow. I'm a person who I want to run from the fear, hide from the fear. This has been my history. And my history now at Overeaters Anonymous is I get to do this a different way. I get to talk about it, share it. Let's have a plan if I need one. Let's bounce it off of somebody that can give me feedback. Let's do this. But be careful. Remember, I said be careful when I speak. Because I'm in my car. And instead of figuring out how to beat myself up or scheme or whatever, it's one I'm guaranteed I'm going to be taken care of. I just can't see it at this moment. I'm talking to myself. I have no problem talking to myself. You guys have all those phones that do magical things. Lonnie will speak to myself in my car. But you know, I'm thinking, okay, I need help. I need guidance. Show me today how to be good to someone else. Show me today. And this is how the way I live my life is not the same anymore. Some of my habits might be the same. I still want to get up in the morning, I might whatever. Right? But my solution to problems, because food was my solution, food was never my problem. My solution to my problems today are very different. So I'm in my car and I'm talking to myself, and I'm basically starting a mantra, which begins with the Serenity Prayer. Thank you for talking about that Serenity Prayer, because at least 20 times it said in various tones of voice, emphasis on various words, doesn't matter. I'm speaking Lonnie's truth this morning. and I'm asking to please show me how to serve, how to help. What do you want me to do today? My day is going to be just fine. My problems will be taken care of. They always are. How do you want, guide me today? Show me. A friend, I spoke with a friend, a fellow, and I agreed to come here tonight because actually I forgot that this meeting was tonight. And I said, oh, we can meet here, we can meet here. This is good. I'll sit in the back of the room. I'll listen to some wonderful recovery. This is great. I walk in the door and someone says, can you help? Can you give service? I'm doing this again very, very soon, like tomorrow morning. And, okay, let me think about it. Let me give it a few seconds. What did I ask for this morning? What did I speak? Show me. Guide me. Let me be of service to my fellows. Let me help keep the rooms open. Let me be present to those who ask for help, just like it was given to me. And here it is. If I ask for wrong things, oh, I get them, not on you, on me. And so I've learned. This is how I'm learning still my lessons. Of when I woke up this morning, I woke up abstinent. I did not wake up immediately thinking about what sweet thing could I devour, which was my life when I came here in December, my last December 1985 before I came here. Completely different. Might not always look different from the outside, but the inside has been washed very clean. Okay, so sometimes I'm still profane, but we don't have to go there. Okay. Appropriately so. And then I let it go. My life is lived differently. My purpose to be here is different. Not what I thought, not what I used to ask for. I ask for different things. Thank you, whoever said I'm a woman. Because I came here a 43-year-old crazy person. You know how I know? Because it said I would be restored to sanity. I have to be insane to be restored to sanity. And I was that, and I owned that. And today I own something different. I will try to be of the best service that I can be to you, to the Fellowship of Overeaters Anonymous, for which I am entirely grateful. Thank you so much for asking me to share.
Promise 10, fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us.
Hi, everybody. My name is Tom, and I'm a compulsive overeater. I'm happy to be here. Carla, thank you for asking me. I feel a little crazy because of the holiday season, and when someone else was sharing, you know, God guide me, I thought that's very, very courageous to say that, you know, into the microphone. 7 years ago this month, I was on a vacation with my wife and my two stepdaughters, and perhaps one of my stepdaughters' lesbian lovers, I can't remember. But it was me and only women, and it's an interesting irony in my life because I grew up in a large family of only boys, and my mom was like a sort of a shadow of a person, so I went from an all-male sort of existence for the first part of my life, and I have found myself in an all-female world, and we were sitting at a nice restaurant. We went up to the San Juan Islands, and we were on one of the big islands, Orcas, and we were at a very nice restaurant, and my 22-year-old stepdaughter at the time, who had just graduated from Berkeley, and she's a theater student and kind of a troublemaker, but, you know, in a fairly sweet way, just belches really loud in this really fancy restaurant, and I was slightly mortified, and there was a very elegant, elderly, wealthy woman sitting at the table, kind of sort of across the way, and I turned my head just for a moment because I thought, oh my gosh, I hope nobody heard that. Of course, the entire restaurant heard it. And just as I was turning to sort of see who might have heard that, she's turning in my direction, and we made eye contact, and it was crystal clear in my mind that, you know, I'm the only male at this table of women, that she thought I had let out this enormous belch. And my first thought was to, you know, even though she's a complete stranger to me, to sort of go up and say, you know, that was me, that was the 22-year-old sitting next to me. And then I realized that if I did that, I would look even worse, because she would think not only am I, you know, a cad and a belcher, but I'm also a liar trying to put it off on the 22-year-old. And the reason I tell that story is because the whole experience demonstrates so strikingly for me how fear has been such an important part of my life, and the biggest, including fear of people, and mainly, my main fear of people is, you know, I mean, we live in a pretty civilized world. You know, most people aren't attacking, we're not attacking our fellows with knives and guns for the most part. You know, what I'm afraid of about people is what, or what I have been afraid of is, what are they going to think of me? You know, and the reason that is such a, I didn't bring my big book up, and I don't want to trip over this cord, but there's some great, I was just looking at fear before I came here, there's some great stuff, and I'm not, you guys know where all this stuff is, and I just want to read one sentence, which I just thought was hysterical. This is starting at the bottom of page 80. I thought, who snuck this sentence in here? Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. Raise your hands. Has anybody ever heard that sentence before? That's at the bottom of page 80, going to the top of page 81, right before you slide into the promises. I was sort of shocked by that, you know. But it's another example of being afraid of, you know, what people would think of you. You know, part of being afraid of what people think of you is you have to be accountable for your own conduct and your choices. You know, the thing about this program that has been so painful for me is, you know, I mean, it's great to talk about, you know, a spiritual, what's the word, what do we have, a spiritual awakening. Yes, we have an awakening, you know. And, you know, for some people, I mean, I was going to say something else, but I'll change it after Lonnie's share about profanity. You know, for some people, me included, the spiritual awakening is just becoming not a jerk, you know. I mean, it's not like so super, you know, fancy. It's just, you know, he's not a jerk anymore, you know. But the other thing about it that is just awful, awful, I've hated it and I continue to hate it, is you must grow up, you know. And especially for men, I mean, it's so different. It's so different for men, and there's so few men in this room. It's like virtually impossible, you know. I mean, you live in a culture where, you know, everything is like sort of handed to you on a silver platter. You know, it's impossible to grow up. But you can do it with these steps and with Bill and, you know, HP, wherever she is out there. Economic insecurity, I know I have like just 60 seconds left, and I just want to say briefly that I'm self-employed. It amazes me how many people in these 12-step programs are self-employed, and I don't think it's a coincidence. You know, there's a term called unemployable. You know, some people who are unemployable become self-employed. But I have to tell you, you know, I'm actually making a good living. I'm a professional, you know. I won't go into the details, but my income stream is very rough, you know, very peaks and valleys, and there's a lot of potential for fear. And just in the last year or so, I have started to have this feeling creep into my life and into my heart that I'm going to be okay, you know, that there's something out there. There's some God or something. I'm not a God person, but there's something out there. I think of this thing as a female thing. You know, I don't know why we would think of this thing as a male thing. It seems ridiculous to me. But whatever this thing is, it protects me. I mean, that's the word. Protected. I'm protected. And it feels wonderful. And, you know, it allows me to do all the things that I do, and I don't know why that... Okay, there it goes. Thank you for letting me share.
Promise 11. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us.
Hi, I'm Maxine, compulsive overeater.
Hi, Maxine.
I feel like the comic who has to speak after Jerry Seinfeld just went on. But I will speak from the heart and do my best. I'm actually about to celebrate in January. We'll be 7 years in program. And I started in New York City, where I live. So anyone who's listening from New York City, a shout out for my original fellows. We moved here about a little over a year ago. And one of the things I intuitively knew was go to a meeting. So I went to a meeting my first week living here. We really didn't know anyone. We really didn't have friends or anything here. And, you know, after an hour being at a meeting, I had a lot of friends. And I knew a lot of people. And I knew that that was one of the first things I needed to do to build a community in a new city, is I could come here and be welcome. So I was listening to the other speakers and kind of listening to how it was before, because gratefully I've been abstinent pretty much my whole time in the program and working the steps, and it's worked out pretty well so far, so I'm excited to see where it goes from here. But what it used to be like in terms of knowing the next right action, knowing the next step to take, in terms of getting from A to Z and whatever it was I was looking to accomplish in life, I couldn't get from A to B. It'd be like A1, A2, A3. I'd find like 15 things before I could even get to B of, you know, I was starting a company and, well, which computer should I buy? You know, and 2 weeks later, I suddenly bought a computer because I was researching all the different computers to buy. And anything I could make like that. There was no clarity. I was in a food fog. I was totally in a food fog because I didn't want to make a decision, because I didn't want to be accountable. And I think that's what it came down to, the fear of accountability, making a decision, failing, falling. I was very good at things naturally growing up. And when it started getting hard, when you had to work for it, and when you had to fail and you had to fall, I didn't want any of that. So I just stopped trying. I just checked out, and I checked into the food. And gratefully, I got to the part of my life where I was like, I'm miserable. I don't like anything I have. I don't have anything that I want to have. And after however many years trying to figure it out, I couldn't do it. I absolutely couldn't do it. And gratefully, I came to this program desperate. And I love the gift of desperation. Because it enables me to do anything. I'm not afraid of anything. I'm not afraid of failing. I'm already feeling like, well, the way I tried it, that's not going to work. So I might as well try it somebody else's way. So I came in here and just, I listened to everything everybody told me to do. I read the books, I followed the steps, I got a sponsor right away. Gratefully, I've never left program, whether we've moved a couple times, I got married, I got pregnant, we have a baby now. I've never left program. I have a sponsor, I have sponsees. And just my way of thinking, my clarity just gets sharper and sharper every day. And so I just intuitively know the next thing to do because I can see now. And the things that used to distract me and the things, the food calling me, the food wanting to get in the way of me taking the next right action, gratefully doesn't happen. And sometimes it wants to, or something else will get in the way or want to get in the way. And I take a pause. And because of this program, I know how to do that. I'm able to take a pause, take a minute, ask my higher power, you know, what is the next thing to do? I mean, it's like the slogan, it's simple, but it's not easy. It takes a lot of work. It's every day I have to rebuild my spiritual fitness. I've heard the expression in here, the shower I took yesterday isn't going to keep me clean today. Every day it's my responsibility to work some tools. And what I get from that is I get everything. I get absolutely everything. Ooh. All right. We have a little fire. It's just a little one, though. So I'll wrap up. So as someone else spoke, you know, you do the work. You come in here, you do the work, you get everything. And it's probably nothing you ever expected, at least for me. I can only speak for myself. But it's better It is a million, it has been a million times better. I have so surpassed my dreams. I am in fantasy land every single day, and I'm very excited to see how it keeps turning out. Thank you.
To those of you listening, the fire is out. So. And there's a beautiful sea of people holding candles, and I wish you all could be here and see it. The 12th promise, we will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jess, compulsive eater bulimic. What a beautiful experience. I became abstinent about 4 years ago. November 19th is my abstinence date. Right before, you know, the food season starts in earnest. And my abstinence date corresponds with the day I met my sponsor. I walked into a meeting I'd never been to, and this woman was there, and she was like the hallelujah chorus was like shooting out of every orifice of her body. And she ended up being the speaker, and I heard her story, and I went up to her afterward, and I said, "You're it. I've been looking for you, if you'll have me." And she said, "Yes." And she says, "Why don't we start now?" So I didn't get that last glorious bit. That last brownie. That last anything on my red light list, because she said, "Go home and write a list of things that you eat when you're feeling sad, happy, good, bad, anxious, fearful, lonely. Write a list of things that even if you only eat one, you want to eat 20. And I had a feeling that she was going to tell me to stop eating from that list. But I was so miserable that I was just willing to be honest. And I wrote it all down, all of it. And from that day, I've not eaten from that list. Now, you want to talk about people suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. I came into program, I was 31. I remember when I'm 3 years old, my parents would find me in the middle of the night with the refrigerator open eating a stick of butter like a banana. I don't know why. Oh, sorry. But I've been doing it that long. Some of you have heard me joke, it's not really a joke, I mean a truth was spoken just, that I've been a compulsive eater since the womb. My mother would tell stories of when she was pregnant with me, she had to eat things she didn't like, she hadn't eaten before, but if she didn't eat them, I would just make her miserable. So this thing has been with me, I think, maybe as long as I've been with me. And to walk into a room and meet a woman and all of a sudden stop doing those things, where did that happen? Nowhere but here. Nowhere but in these rooms. Now, as someone else is saying, the food is just a symptom. And someone else said the food has been the solution. It was never the problem. That's very, very true. God suddenly helps me stop binging and eating sugar and processed white flour and doing crazy, 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 crazy destructive things with food that had me in hospitals and insulin resistant and pre-diabetic and IBS and all kinds of craziness. I stopped doing those things and my life did not become, you know, I didn't get the perfect Hollywood ending just by stopped doing those things. I always thought if I could just lose 30 pounds, then my life would be better. If I could just finally not have thighs that touched in the middle, my life would be better.
it never occurred to me if I could stop, like, stuffing myself to the point that I wanted to throw up, and I, you know, completely checked out of life and, you know, shut the curtains and didn't want to answer the phone, that if I could stop doing that, my life would be better. That never occurred to me. But when God relieved me of that behavior, my life did become better. But, you know, we got a long way to go. And, you know, it doesn't, the promises don't say financial insecurity will leave us or people will leave us alone. It just says the fear of those things go away, and that has been my experience. But I've also heard, you know, it does say, we say it works if you work it. It says, you know, these things will materialize for us if we work for them. And I'm glad I heard tonight that that the promise, because somewhere along the way, thank you, I heard that the promises were just the ninth-step promises. And I remember telling my first sponsor, but it's happening already. And I like hearing now, oh, yes, it was. And that's the way it was designed to happen. But what I've come to understand and believe is it works however we believe it works. That's why, you know, there's no one food you're supposed to eat that will make you abstinent. There's no one food you're supposed to not eat that will make you abstinent. There's no miracle item, or else that would be all of our higher power. If there was just a thing I could do to be better, I would worship at the altar of that thing. Screw the power that created the universe. And so before program, that's the way I believed what life worked, and so that's the experience of life I had. In this program, doing the steps, I've expanded my concept of a higher power, this higher power that's going to suddenly do for me what I could do for myself. It just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And when I reach step 12, guess what? I get to do it again. And remember, this big, okay, now I think I know what this higher power is, and I can go out and give it to other people. I go back to, oh, yeah, but I'm powerless over a chocolate chip cookie. How can I really understand the power that created everything? What I understand is this big. Let me admit that I don't understand it all. So I can, again, you know, reaffirm my belief that there is something out there that's even bigger than what I've come to know. Then I can turn my will over to it and have a whole new experience. And I just get to keep doing it over and over and over again. Now, what I used to do for myself, when I first moved to LA 5 years ago, I lived just down the block. And I would pass by this building to go to all kinds of binge places. That's what I do on my own. With you guys, with what I've learned here, with this power that I keep coming to understand more and more and more and more as the years go by and the rooms get bigger, brings me here. And here was always here. When I was out there, here was always here. I didn't have to work to get it. The only work I have to do is to believe that this power will take care of me. That's it. Thanks.
At this time, may we now ask ourselves, are these extravagant promises? They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. The holiday season can be one of great stress and concern for many, and we will hear the 12 steps to a better holiday season, courtesy of Lifetime. Lifeline.
So pretty in this room. I'm Hope, compulsive reader food addict. 12 steps to a better holiday season. 1, we admitted the holiday season has a deeper meaning than devouring food. 2, we came to believe a power greater than ourselves could help us see and celebrate the true meaning of the season. 3, we came to believe our higher power could help us appreciate
the joyfulness of the season as we understand it. 4, we made a searching and thorough examination of our relationship with food during the holidays and other things we enjoy about the season. 5, we admitted to our higher power the exact nature of our food habits during holiday seasons past. 6, we became entirely ready to allow our higher power to remove our attachment to food as a necessity of the holidays. 7, we humbly asked him to remove our desires to partake of holiday treats. 8, we made a list of all persons whose presence makes the holiday season joyful for us and with whom we would like to share our joy. 9, we made plans to spend time with those people whenever possible, except when to do so would remove us from our primary purpose of abstinence. 10, we continue to enjoy the company of friends and family and other non-food aspects of the season. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our appreciation of the season, praying for knowledge of its meaning and the joy as we feel at this time. And 12, having realized that sharing the joy of this season with others far outlasts the fleeting pleasure of food, we gave ourselves the gift of abstinence throughout the holidays and gave others the gift of our full attention and appreciation.
Okay, at this time, let's thank our speakers for sharing their experience. And I'd like to thank all of you who helped and all of you who came to be with us, to join us at this very special Promises meeting. And happy holidays, and God bless everybody.
And let's thank Carla for her work.
After a moment of silent meditation for those who still suffer, will Jack please lead us in a closing prayer of his choice?
I'm Jack, compulsive overeater.
I'm Jack.
Let's do the Serenity. We version, please. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things we cannot change, the courage to change the things we can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you.
Thank you all, and we'll see you next year.